and WBZH 910 AM, W245CT Hayward. Always streaming on the Civic
ABC
Media app.
ABC News, I'm Andy Field. President Biden still planning to attend this week's G20 summit in India, despite the First Lady's COVID diagnosis.
We do not have any changes to any updates or changes to his travel. The president tested negative yesterday. He tested negative this morning, and he has no symptoms. He's feeling good.
Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre, former Proud Boys leader Enrique Tarrio, sentenced to 22 years in prison for the January 6th attack on the Capitol. Impeachment trial of Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton underway in Austin, with opening statements from State Representative Andrew Muir.
We have detailed that Mr. Paxton received favors, including home renovations and help in concealing and continuing an extramarital affair.
As the articles of impeachment were formally read aloud, Paxton's attorney Tony Busby answered by calling them untrue and saying his client pleads not guilty. That traffic jam leaving the Burning Man Festival has now eased considerably. This is ABC News. Now that Congress is back in session, House Republicans have intensified their focus on the Biden family.
Key House Republicans keeping busy on their last week of recess. On Tuesday, House Oversight Committee Chairman James Comer issued several subpoenas to Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas and multiple Department of Homeland Security and Secret Service officials. Comer is demanding documents and testimony regarding investigations into the president's son, Hunter Biden. In a statement, Comer alleges that parts of the federal government initiated a, quote, Biden family cover-up. The House returns to Washington next week. Brittany Shepard, ABC News, Washington.
Tulsa will carry out a third excavation at Oak Lawn Cemetery to search for victims of the 1921 race massacre. At least 300 African Americans were killed, thousands left homeless after a white mob attacked what is known as Black Wall Street in Tulsa. Andy Field, ABC News.
The Civic Media Network of radio stations across Wisconsin. We are your hometown radio, refreshed.
For Civic Media News, I'm James Kelly. According to a WPR report, the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources and scientists are studying Wisconsin wildlife for signs of the impact of ingesting PFAS. Department of Natural Resources officials have detected PFAS in the water supply across the state since they began searching in 2007. PFAS have gained recent attention in Wisconsin as the Department of Natural Resources draws attention to them, and legislation is proposed to mitigate the negative effects. Wisconsin Attorney General Josh Call is reminding Wisconsin students, teachers, and parents that the Wisconsin Department of Justice's Office of School Safety and all its resources are still available to help keep kids safe this school year. The state reallocated $1.3 million in American Rescue Plan Act funds to extend the Office of School Safety's operations, including the 24-hour tip line, critical incident response teams, and threat assessment consultation. For Civic Media News, I'm James Kelly.
As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry.
And apparently, Maggie Dawn, big Newton lover of the Maggie Dawn Show.
I was so offended, Jane. You know how much I love and admire you. You're like my freaking radio hero. And then to hear you bash my Newton.
It's still bad.
You want the cakey part cakey. You want the jammy part jammy. That is like bringing me back.
As Goes Wisconsin with host Kristen Bry. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry.
When you want something so badly, what you're able to justify and rationalize and get over, so I would say there's not a non-zero chance.
But what record would she run on? Foxconn?
I mean, what did she run on for governor? Probably the same thing.
I just remember her warning about people will be marrying coffee tables once gay marriage is allowed, so I'd like her to run just so I can ask her how many of those weddings she's been to.
As Goes Wisconsin with host Kristen Brock. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
More than 80 million Americans depend on AM radio each month for news, weather, and emergency information. A new bill in Congress would make sure AM radio remains in cars, because when cell and internet services are down, this free service could be your only lifeline. Text AM to 52886 and tell Congress to support the AM Radio for Every Vehicle Act.
Message and data rates may apply. You may receive up to 4 messages a month, and you may text STOP to STOP.
This message furnished by the National Association of Broadcasters.
If I could be you,
and you could be me,
for just 1 hour.
If you could find a way
to get inside
each other's mind.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
We've all felt left out. And for some, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Sometimes I just cannot believe all the storms we've gone through here.
I can only hope that we'll be able to leave this house to you one day, baby. You're our legacy.
Planning for these disasters will make sure we're safe, and is the best way to protect that legacy.
Protect your legacy. Visit ready.gov/plan for the tools and tips you need to start your emergency preparedness plan today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Your home for local news, weather, and sports across the airwaves and always streaming on the Civic Media app. Thanks for listening to your local Civic Media radio station. Learn more on our website, civicmedia.us.
Storm turned the desert into treacherous mud, trapping tens of thousands of people amid overflowing latrines and shortages of food and water. One death at the festival is under investigation, and this latest disaster demonstrates once again that climate change intensified extreme weather events can strike everywhere at any time.
Well, they went to the desert knowing it'd be about 115 degrees, so maybe this was nice. For much more on all of those stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find, follow, and share us planet-wide on the Facebooks, Mastodons, and sites still known as Twitter at Green News Report.
Are you tired of think tank-approved corporate news and commentary? Are you tired of CEOs telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So over the weekend, I keep seeing stories. Got to keep Trump off the ballot. We're going to use Section 3 of Article 14 or the 14th Amendment. And I'm going, why? Why is it that Democrats feel the need to save the Republican Party? Why is it? Same thing when they did when they threw Marjorie Trainwreck Greene off of her committee. Look, I said then, and I'll say it again, the dumbest thing Democrats ever did, taking her off the education committee. Because like I said, the thing she said earlier, how many taxes did they pay during the Ice Age? How did government melt the Ice Age? What? You can't be that stupid. And I said, look, keep her on the education committee so that you can point to her and go, we need more education funding. Exhibit A. Look at how dumb this woman is. You'd get your education funding. But no. Democrats have to feel the need to go and save the day from people like Green or people like Trump. I got to tell you, I think the only person Biden can beat in a general is Trump. So don't wish him away. But here to share some thoughts on the savior. I've asked our good friend Joe Walsh to come share some thoughts. Former Illinois Congressman, 2020 Republican presidential candidate, also host of White Flag with Joe Walsh podcast. You can find that wherever you get your favorite podcast. Joe, thanks for taking time for us.
Rick, it's been too long. Good to be with you, brother.
So what do you make of this? I mean, I'm frustrated that the Democrats keep trying to find a way to keep Trump off the ballot because, you know, and I'm going to take a lot of flack for this, and I probably should. But I got to tell you, I think the only person that Biden beats is Trump.
I beg to differ. I maybe you don't agree with me. I think Donald Trump is an existential threat to our democracy. So anything we can do to get rid of him, whether it's the 14th Amendment, whether it's whatever, or we just beat him at the ballot box.
That's what we do.
We have to do. I think the 14th Amendment thing is pie in the sky stuff. I don't think that's going to happen. But man, Rick, you look at every possible thing we can do to keep him from A, being the Republican nominee, and then B, getting elected.
See, I see it this way. Democrats need to have this need to save the Republican Party. Trump is the Republicans' problem right now. If they want to go and pursue the 14th Amendment, good on them. Let them do that. But I just don't see Democrats that they should be jumping in that. The place to beat Donald Trump, in my view, is at the polls. You go, you organize, you get people excited to vote, and you beat this guy at the polls. Because if you do any gimmickry, I think you have more chaos on the other side.
Well, I agree with you on this, Rick. We all got to stop hoping, wishing, and praying that something else is going to happen. I was on George Stephanopoulos over the weekend. Is stunned, he said, shocked that Biden and Trump are neck and neck. Another poll, a couple polls recently showing Trump and Biden neck and neck, and he can't understand it. He can't believe it. All of us need to wake up to these truths. Trump is going to be the nominee. He was always going to be the nominee. End of story. My party is a cult. He's the cult leader. Ain't nobody else is going to be the nominee. And by the way, he's got a damn good chance of getting reelected.
Do you think
we
so?
Need to accept? Oh, yeah, Rick, we need to accept those truths so we can beat him. I hear from way too many Democrats who are in denial, who think there's no way Trump could ever win again. Bullshit.
I'm not saying there's no way, but I think with Trump, I think people are in their camps. I don't think there are as many persuadables as with other candidates, and I think Biden has a better chance of beating Trump than the others. That's how I feel. That's how I think. I don't see new Trump voters. I only see him losing people.
Again, I disagree. I think if it's Trump Biden tomorrow, Trump would be the favorite. And put aside Biden and his issues and the party's issues. In some of this latest polling, Rick, there are actually more Biden supporters who've moved to Trump than Trump supporters who've moved to Biden since 2020. And young people have really soured on Biden. I think there are real issues. One more thing I'll throw at you, Rick. These four indictments, I hear every day from Republicans and conservatives who can't stand Trump. And even they are telling me, Joe, this is BS. He's being targeted. They're going after him. I think he can play this next year in his favor. Imagine, Rick, one hung jury. Imagine he's acquitted on one of these charges next year. Yeah, he's a superhero.
No, you're not wrong there. And that is a fear in this, which is why you have the prosecutors now going back to the judge saying, hey, you know, he's tainting the jury pool with all of this social media stuff.
But this is the lay of the land. He's running for president. He's got a right to say what he wants to say and risk the consequences. All I'm saying is there are so many unknowns out there right now. Biden's age. Trump succeeding in one of these trials. I'll tell you, we need to accept the fact that the election is going to be really, really close between these two.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying it's going to be a landslide. I've got some friends who think it's a landslide.
No,
I don't. I'll tell you, I love the things that Biden's been doing policy-wise. I know you'll disagree with that. He's doing a lot of the stuff that I've been wanting to see happen for decades, especially around the NLRB and the Department of Labor. But, you know, that's nuanced stuff. That's not going to really excite, other than me and a couple of people that I hang around with, that's not really going to excite the masses. I think the economy, if things turn around and keep moving in the direction that they're moving, maybe, but I'm a little more concerned about anyone else but Trump, to be honest.
Rick, such a big part of a president's job is communication.
Yeah.
And look, Biden can't do that part of his job anymore. And it shows the economy is doing better than people feel it's doing. A lot of that has to do with the fact that the president of the United States can't really consistently communicate how things are going out there.
No. And look, I've said this for the last year and have been beat up at every turn. Well, you're just beating up. No, I'm saying what is true. Biden struggles with the basic punchlines, and you need to make sure that happens, which is why I think anyone but Trump, I think people are in their camps on Trump. And anyone else, I think Biden would struggle with more. So then, what if you're the Democrats? What do you do?
if you're the Democrats, if I were advising Biden and the Democrats, all I'm talking about, and Biden began to do some of this over Labor Day, the economy, and pound Trump on the economy, pound Trump on jobs. Just focus on that. If I'm Biden, I ignore all the indictments. I ignore all of Trump's legal battles and focus on the basics of the economy every single damn day.
No, there's absolute truth in that. But now on these indictments, the weird part for me here, Joe, is, you know, I know all of my constitutional scholars and all of my, you know, my Tea Party friends who carried the Constitution around with them. This is our system. I keep hearing people saying, well, they're rigging the system. They've weaponized. This is our system. This is how you hold people accountable. Am I missing something here?
No. I would just phrase it like this. My former political party no longer believes in the rule of law. So that's what we're seeing. In 2020, to be a good Republican, you had to deny basic election results. To be a good Republican now, you have to deny the rule of law and actually fight against the justice system. My former colleagues in Congress, Rick, they're Jim Jordan and the rest, they want to hold hearings and go after the prosecutor down in Atlanta and go after Jack Smith. I mean, interfering with legal proceedings like this, using Congress to do that, it's astounding, but it's all about protecting Trump.
Now, what's interesting to me is, you know, today, obviously, Peter Navarro's trial started. You got some sentencings today that Enrico Tarrio gets 22 years. Does this land? I mean, you're talking to the conservative audiences. Does this matter to them, or is this all just part of the? No,
no
he's shaking
no.
his head. It doesn't
no,
matter.
No, that choo-choo train left a long time ago. It's like I was on CNN with some woman yesterday, a couple days ago, who said that these indictments aren't hurting Trump. And I screamed, I said, no, they're helping him. Because the narrative is Donald Trump is a victim. He's the most persecuted person in human history. So every indictment only, Rick, only furthers that narrative. And every insurrectionist who is sentenced only furthers that narrative. It strengthens what, sadly, everybody on my right now believes, which is that, you know, the justice system is being used to go after the right, which is just a bunch of BS.
Well, I've always said, and this is where you're going to take exception to, but I'm going to say it anyway. I've always said that no one plays the victim or the martyr like a conservative. They do it so well. I mean, you know, the left does it too. They try. They just don't do it well. The right, man, they are masters at that victimization. Maybe it's the religion thing, I don't know, but they could nail themselves to a cross like anyone.
It's some of it's the religion thing, Rick, and some of it is kind of the white man thing. A lot of white men feel like, you know, feel aggrieved and bitter because life's changing real fast. So you need somebody to blame. Right. Somebody to blame for taking that job or coming into the country or whatever. And Trump and all the demagogues on the right. And I used to do some of this. Feed that victimization. Blame somebody else. But you're right about that. Trump is. I've never seen anyone master that victimization like Trump has.
I mean, it's amazing. I sit and I watch and I go, you know, I'm often in awe of how well the right does the outrage. I mean, you know, the daily dose of outrage is incredible to me. I don't know how to do it. And I'll be very honest. I don't know how you can keep people enraged 24/7, 365 to where they're voting against their own economic interests. That's a struggle for me. But, you know, this is where we are. And I was just watching a piece on talk radio and this medium that we're part of as being a huge part of what caused that national grievance mentality. Do you agree that this medium had a big role in that?
Yes. And I've said that and publicly apologized for a number of years now because I used to do some of that. There's gold in on the right, you know that, Rick, in spreading this fear, in making primarily your white audience feel like they're being victimized. Tucker does it brilliantly. Hannity does it brilliantly. The more outraged and inflamed you can make your audience feel on the right, man, the way better you'll do ratings wise.
Yeah, no, I saw Obama's gay again, and I saw what was the other thing that popped up that I'm going, where is this stuff coming from? Oh yeah, it's coming from Tucker and the outrage machine. That's Tucker. Where it's all coming from, and this is not good for democracy. So last line of questioning I've got for you, we have a little bit varying different opinion on the Trump thing. I think he has to be beat at the polls. I think it has to be a sound beating. I think it has to be something that the country reclaims. But do you see any way that he's going to be held off the ballot? I don't think Democrats are going to be able to do it. I think it has to come from within the Republican Party. But do you see any way he's not the nominee?
If a heart attack kills him or a jail cell puts him away forever, that's it. And even the jail cell
thing,
Rick, I'm shaking.
He can run from jail. Debs did, back 100 years ago. So, yeah, he could.
No, but a heart attack that felled him would definitely do it. But no, this is, Rick, 2.5 years ago, he led a violent attempt to overthrow an American election. And he's stronger now than he's ever been in that party. So nothing can break his connection with the voters of that party. He's going to be the nominee, and your audience needs to wake up to the fact that right now I think he's a better than 50-50 chance of beating Biden head on in the polls.
Wow. I put it at 50-50. You're saying better than. And you're
yes.
Right. People listening have got to wake up and understand what that means.
And do it again, Rick, and do it again. I'm so tired of this bull crap that you're not enthused about Biden. Who gives a damn how old Biden is? Donald Trump would end our democracy. I don't give a damn how old Biden is. We have to do what we did in 20, where the Rick Smiths and the Joe Walshes of the world lock arms again, and we demand everybody go vote. Because if we don't do that, all of us again, Trump will win.
Yeah, and it will be ugly because he said his only agenda is retribution.
Yes. Yes. And we've seen what that looks like because that was the House Republicans' only agenda once they took control of the House. And look at how well they're doing.
Yeah, no, excellent point. But Joe, as always, appreciate the time. You got to come back again real soon. Love the enthusiasm.
Love you, Rick Smith. Love you.
Thank you, brother. Our good friend Joe Walsh. We've got to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Quick break. Right back with your thoughts. Stick around.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425. Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Ah, yes. Retribution. That's all it's going to be about. And, where Joe and I agree is there, it will be a fight. But I think Biden is the guy. I think Trump's the guy Biden can beat. I'm concerned in a whole bunch of other ways, but I think that has to happen in order for us to reclaim our democracy and reclaim our way forward. And what's frustrating is I know the retribution that's coming because they're telling us. They're already telegraphing the entire plan. In fact, the Heritage Foundation, they've got this, what are they calling it? Project 2025. This is all about ensuring that they only put in good, you know, good conservative kind of folk that they can control. That they have, you know, people in place who, well, are gonna be loyal to Trump, and that's the part that's kind of scary. That it's no longer about good governance. They're gonna go and they're gonna destroy all the federal employment, and patronage will be great again. We're gonna bring back the good old days where you've got to be loyal to the good to whichever party, which I am completely opposed to. But this is what they're already saying. And the Heritage Foundation's got a whole training scheme. They've got a whole vetting process. There's a whole bunch of stuff here that is going to, well, show your worthiness to help, well, bring back some of that retribution. And that's, I got to tell you, that should, if that doesn't scare people to go, hey, I got to get out and vote. I got to register to vote. I got to plan to vote. I got to get out and vote. And I got to vote for Biden. I don't know what is. I don't know what's left. Let's go to the phones. Got Bob on line one from Silicon Valley. Bob, how are you?
I'm pretty good, but I want to add a little piece here.
Hit me.
You're talking about the way people perceive what's going on. And part of it, I think, is being shaped by our media.
Yes.
Who really want to have a horse race kind of thing, and there's basically they commit the sin of omission. They don't want to talk about things like words like retribution. That becomes kind of one-sided. So they want to make it like more of a horse race, and they want to say, well, this side and that side, you know, we're fair and balanced.
Yeah, both sides-ism.
Yeah, and the trouble is. There's the omissions go both ways, of course, much more on the Republican side in terms of the media not calling a spade a spade.
Or a criminal a criminal.
Well, yeah, that's true. And or even talking about stuff, is say they commit the sin of omission almost all the time. And that's the thing that bothers me is how do you find out what's been left out when you hear a report of some sort in the news?
That's a good question.
That's and the problem. I haven't got a good answer for.
I don't either. I think the more we dig in and the more we talk about things, the more we expose stuff, the better chance we've got. But ultimately, when someone tells us who they are, we should believe them. So when Trump tells me retribution is on his agenda, you know, we should believe him.
I agree. The problem is we have short memories. And if we hear that from 6 months ago or a year ago, pretend to forget it, even though he said it, you know, and you're absolutely right. It's the point of, I guess you could say, the analysts in the media who say, remember he said this and then this and then this, and they tend not to want to talk about past history. They want to talk about the horse race, but not how it got there.
No, it's all anyway, about the money.
Thank you, Rick. I appreciate your bringing it up because you're one of the few people to do it.
No, I think it's important. I appreciate the call, Bob. Thank you. No, I mean, at the end of the day, you know, we've got to hold people accountable for what they say and what their goals are. I mean, for me, when Trump talked about retribution and this Project 2025 that they're moving on, they're telling you what they're going to do. They're going to create a dictatorial system, an authoritative system that our government has not been. And should never be. Now, what they do, and what I find amazing, and you listen to the right voices, you listen to the bingos or bongos or whatever is Bembino, saying, "Well, you know, Joe Biden's a dictator. You know, he's moving us towards it." And you go, "Hold on, is this the same Sleepy Joe? Is this the same guy who you say can't do anything? The same guy? Are you sure?" And this is where I go back to the Mitch McConnell quote. Which is just, it's stuck in my head. There's too much government, but the government's not doing enough. And it's that mindset that you know, he's feeble. He's demented. He's got dementia. He's old. He's all this. But he's this great, incredible mastermind who learned coding and stole elections and is single-handedly indicting Trump in all of these places. And it's how you put both of those things in one head at one time is, I don't know. It's gymnastics. It's quite impressive. Because it says that you're not challenging either position. You're just accepting what outrage is being thrown out there. And I fear that's bad for democracy. It's bad for our system. Now, I've taken some heat for my position on this election. And I do believe that the only way we can move forward as a country is if Trump is soundly defeated at the polls. That's my preference. If the Republicans figure out a way to keep him off the ballot, that's them doing it. I still don't think Democrats should be involved in it. Just my thought. Much like the Marjorie Taylor Greene thing, kicking her off committees. Bad idea. He's a Republican problem in the primary, but in the general, we've all got to take him on. And this is where Republicans, if they didn't want him, here's a chance for them. You know, the Chris Christies of the world, who sat by and did nothing during Trump's tenure. It's time for him. Back after this. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1882. That was the day that the first Labor Day celebration and parade took place in New York City. The New York Sun printed a vivid report of the parade of 10,000 marching workers. The paper described, quote, men wearing regalia, men with society aprons, and men with flags, musical instruments, badges, and all the other paraphernalia of a procession. The article went on to say, quote, as far ahead as one could see, and as far down the side streets as forms and faces could be distinguished, the windows and roofs and even the lampposts and awning frames were occupied by persons anxious to get a good view of the first parade in New York of working men of all trades united in one organization. All along the line, cheers were sent up. The reporter described the colorful banners carried by each trade union and noted that following the bricklayers came, quote, two decorated wagons containing brick arches. On each side of one of the wagons were the inscriptions 8 hours for work, 8 hours for rest, and 8 hours for recreation. And, get on to it, the union will never surrender. From New York, the idea of setting aside a holiday for workers spread. Oregon became the first state to officially recognize the holiday in 1897. Colorado, Massachusetts, New Jersey, and New York established a Labor Day that year as well. By 1894, 23 more states celebrated the workers' holiday. It was that year that President Grover Cleveland declared it a national holiday in response to the Pullman strike and boycott that began in Chicago. Labor Day is the day to honor the sacrifices made by labor fighting for safe and fair workplaces.
Labor History in Two, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
A few days ago, the city of Savannah, Georgia, took an important symbolic step toward racial inclusiveness, naming one of Savannah's 23 historic public squares for a black woman. Susie King Taylor, born in 1848 to enslaved parents, became a renowned educator, setting up schools for emancipated children and adults, a laudable role model in America's ongoing struggle to extend equal opportunity to all. Before adding Taylor's name, though, the name that had been plastered on that square 170 years ago, John C. Calhoun, had to be subtracted. Council members did that last year, finding the South Carolina senator and two-time vice president unworthy of any public honor. Why? Well, why would Georgians of 1853 create a monument to a lawmaker from another state? Answer, slavery. No politician in our history has been a more vehement apologist and promoter of human enslavement than Calhoun. Thus, racist Southern leaders revered him. A rich son of plantation privilege, Calhoun owned dozens of slaves. More shamefully, he built his political career by fabricating a hokey economic theory asserting that slavery was such a, quote, positive good that even white workers in northern factories should be converted to slave laborers. Worst of all, Calhoun opposed the democratic ideal of majority rule, crying that it allowed the many to interfere with the freedom of the elite property class, his own, to do what they wish with their properties, including slaves. He even favored outright plutocracy, proposing that the rich should be given a special right to overturn laws they don't like. This is Jim Hightower saying, while Savannah is doing the right thing by saying no to this autocrat, beware, for the Koch brothers network of today's plutocratic billionaires is organizing to impose his plutocratic order over us. To learn more, go to TrueNorthResearch.org.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, Henry Enrique Tarrio, convicted of leading the group that one judge called the tip of the spear of people getting into the Capitol. He was sentenced to 22 years in prison today. And good. What I find interesting is all of the right-wing victims, all of the the martyr crowd go, 22 years, he wasn't even there. He didn't do anything. He got much worse than Stuart Rhodes, who got, I think, 18 years. And you go, well, Tarrio had a rap sheet, a very long sheet, evidently. That's what precipitated the longer sentence. Now, I love the defense of he wasn't even there. And the most popular response to that has been, you know, Osama bin Laden wasn't in New York during 9/11. Using the logic that he wasn't even there, he should have gotten off scot-free. I know it's ludicrous, it's ridiculous, but it is the argument of the right. I'm here to share some thoughts on the sentence and some of the longer sentences that have been handed down here recently. I've asked our good friend Bob Ney, former Ohio congressman and political analyst, to come share some thoughts. Bob, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, thank you, Rick.
So what do you think? 22 years, is that good enough? The government was asking for 33, got 22.
That's okay. I mean, it was a little bit less than asked for and a lot more than he wanted. So I think it's a decent sentence. And the other thing is about, you know, the fact that it's the consequences of conspiring to oppose the lawful movement from, you know, one president to another, and it's called elections in our country. So it doesn't matter if he broke a window in the Capitol himself. The fact that it was definitely proven, and they had a lot of proof on this, it was proven that he was behind the leader, one of the leaders of the conspiracy, and it's called sedition. So, you know, obviously, I think he got a sentence that hopefully will tell others that are still going to go through the legal process, you kind of better think about where you're headed with this.
Yeah, you know, I was reading through the sentence, and I was reading this story, and my mind went to this really mean place. I don't normally allow myself to do this, but I started thinking, I hope the guy who closes the jail door each night, you know, just tells them to stand back and stand by. Because if you remember, that's what Trump told everyone. Stand back and stand by on January 6th.
Yeah, I got you.
So there's part of me that goes, every night, that should be the response.
Well, I think he'll be thinking about a lot of things, you know, for the next 22 years. And it's federal, so you have to serve 85% of your time. Yeah. There's no parole board. I do want to point that out. You know, he, in order to prepare for this entire attack, he and the other leaders, they developed this command that they chose to do. They chose the time. They chose the place they were going to do this. They brought people into the fold to do this. And they were prepared to engage in, you know, any type of opposition or violence that they had to. I mean, they went in there with those ties also, you know. Of
zip ties,
what were they going to do? Strap people, you know, down with those plastic ties? I mean, they were prepared to do some things,
yeah.
Including Pence is lucky. You know, he might have been hanging from somewhere.
No, you're absolutely right. But here's my question, and I keep coming back to the thing I said the night of January 6th on this show. I said, what I want is I want the people who funded this. I want the moneyed interest behind all of this. And I want the people in positions of power, the people in Congress who aided and abetted. And we haven't seen any of that stuff.
I would assume it will come out somewhere along the line with the feds. If it doesn't, that's a shame, you know.
Because there were all those allegations, and maybe you remember this, there were all these allegations of, you know, I think it was Boebert and some others who gave tours the day before that were unauthorized, and there was a lot of talk around that. Whatever happened with any of that stuff?
Well, there's the problem. Nobody digs into these things. Look, as far as tours of the Capitol, and I can tell you this because I was, as you know, chairman of the House administration, I was in charge of the tours. I was in charge of the House side for the Speaker. Now, a member of, and this is so easy to find out, a member of Congress doesn't have to schedule a tour. Now, if they want to have a group take a tour without them, yes, you schedule tours. If the member goes, then absolutely no one stops the member. You can do your own private tour. You can go anywhere you want, except unless the House is in session. And when it's not in session, you can take people on the floor of the House. So those members... When I think the key point in the media is unauthorized tours. Well, here's where the media fails, Rick, the national media, national corporate media. They fail because, well, the story of unauthorized tours. Okay, they were most likely authorized because the member took them. National ought to start understanding the system in D.C. because then it's easy to say, okay, fine, you know, you took them on a tour, but who did you take on a tour? What was said? What did you show them? Did you take them to restricted areas that were members only?
Right.
Those are the questions that national media doesn't dig into. And you've got to have them on it or you're never going to get the answer.
Yeah, I don't think we're ever going to find any of that out. But it's just one of those things that popped into my head of, you know, I want to know who gave the tours and I want to know if these people were part of that.
Right.
Because exactly. They had to have intimate knowledge and do reconnaissance to be able to get into the places that they got in because they were weak points.
Well, the other thing, and I don't know, I wasn't privy to the 40,000 hours. You know, I know the House side like the back of my hand. I know where the rooms are downstairs that if I take you down there, you're going to say, oh, that if you open that door, that's probably a garbage disposal area. No, it's not. There's offices. There's things down there. So, you know, somebody, I would like them to tell me who went down below the floor of the House. And what rooms did they go into there?
Yeah.
Because those rooms are normally locked. They're not authorized. And I would like to know if did somebody have a key and they were getting into rooms? I'd like to know that.
No, I'm with you.
We're never going to find it out. Maybe we will, you know, in 30 years, somebody will reveal something. But none of that has been explored. In fact, I don't even think it's been explored by the members.
Yeah, I think they're past it. I mean, that's... I just think they think, you know, the courts are taking care of it. Move on. Time for something new.
Right.
Now, I saw a story today of my congressman, Scott Perry. Scott, pardon me, Perry. Evidently, a federal appeals court has partially blocked efforts of the special counsel to be able to get inside of Perry's phone. Is this a big deal?
And what was the rationale for it?
Well, I mean, you know, Perry was, you know, involved with, you know, what was going on January 6th? It was his
right.
idea to bring somebody in to be the acting attorney general, to be able to do some of the stuff that Trump wanted to do. I mean, Perry was front and center to a lot of what happened on January 6th.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. What I mean is, what about the cell phone, though?
Well, I'm sure they wanted to get in to find texts and whatever information that were, you know, was on it, phone call. You know, I assume.
Well, they seized that cell phone. Now, that was back in February.
Right.
And they seized, in the last stories I saw on it, he had 900-some records they knew that he was talking to executive branch officials about the presidential election, you know, et cetera. So I thought they had those.
Yeah, I just saw this, and I'm going, you know, is this a loss? Is this, you know... Does Perry get to walk away scot-free?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Right, because they...
No pun intended.
The, what, the stories go back to actually, I think it was, yes, it was 2022, some point in time in the fall of 2022. Then in 2023, there were additional stories about what was on the phone, and then all of a sudden, nothing.
Yeah.
And I can't put my arms around that of, you know, what happens? Somebody opened the phone. What did they find? There was mention originally in some press articles about executive correspondence between he, you know, in the White House, and then all of a sudden it's like, okay, it's gone.
Yeah, I thought you might have some inkling of an idea. Yep. 'Cause I'm looking too, and I'm going, I'm not seeing
none.
Also, got to get your thoughts on Senator Sheldon Whitehouse filing an ethics complaint over the Alito interview.
No, I did not see that. What did he do?
Yeah, he's Alito questioned whether they have the right to, Congress has the power to impose rules on the Supreme Court. So he's evidently filing an ethics charge against Alito over the interview. And I would have to assume at some point over all of the things that they've pocketed over the years. I mean, the more we find out about our Supreme Court, man, they should have NASCAR patches all over their robes.
Mm-hmm. So if he's asking that they... he's asking, I guess, Roberts then to take action on the entire thing. But you're saying that Justice Alito is questioning whether he has the authority to do that?
Yeah, I mean, Alito said that there's no provision in the Constitution that gives Congress the authority to regulate the Supreme Court.
Well, that's not true. I mean, just if something's, okay, there's nothing in the Constitution that directly said that Congress could create Medicare. Yeah, there's nothing in the Constitution that directly says Congress can create HUD, but there was nothing in the Constitution that said you can't, and there's nothing in that Constitution, because Congress has budgetary power and lawmaking power, there's nothing in that Constitution that says you, the Congress, shall stay away from the United States Supreme Court. There's nothing in there.
Now, what Whitehouse said, quote, was making public comments, assessing the merits of a legal issue that could come before the court undoubtedly creates the very appearance of impropriety these rules are meant to protect. So he's basically saying, look, you know, we could pass a law that puts some things into place and it could come before you. And you're already saying, you know, how you would respond to this. You know, there's a problem there.
Right.
This whole infighting over the court, though, at some point, doesn't Roberts have to step forward and say, no, I'm going to, for the sake of transparency, I'm going to put some pretty strict measures into place so that we restore some faith and some value in this institution?
Well, the answer to that actually is technically should be, but the answer is no, because now, like the senator's complaint, he can file an ethics complaint. But there probably is no particular jurisdiction of filing an ethics complaint directly involving the House on the Supreme Court. However, Congress surely tomorrow morning can create, because it is a federal position paid by taxpayers, Congress can create ethics laws. They can change them on themselves. They can create them for any federal judge. They can create them for the United States Supreme Court. That's a federal judge, too. Nothing prohibits that, you know, from happening. Now, as far as your question about Roberts, let's just look at, forget the rest of what we don't know yet on other justices. I mean, look at Clarence Thomas alone. What some facts came out, about 5 or 6 weeks ago, new ones on him, right?
Oh, yeah, there have been tons of them.
Yeah, and nothing. I mean, crickets, because nobody is putting pressure upon Roberts to, you know, cough up an answer. Are you going to change things? You're going to let things sit as they are? You're going to, devise an internal code of ethics for the Supreme Court justices, you know, that prevents this type of thing in the future? And unless he's pushed or pressured, the answer is going to be no. He's not going to do anything. He's just going to say, well, you know, we took a look at it and it's okay. And we're telling them, hey, guys, you know, be a little bit more thoughtful. You know, that's where we'll end up at. If nobody hits this, I don't know why the Congress, you know, if I were the members of the Judiciary Committee, and I know that, of course, Republicans control the House. I fully understand that. But I would still make enough noise, try to do legislation, try to do floor amendments. Put it together as a floor amendment to add to a bill. The Senate, they should do something through the Judiciary Committee. So unless something's done, this is just going to, quote, go away until the next story comes out.
Yeah, well, and there will be another one because I don't think they're going to stop taking trips. I don't think they're going to stop lining their pockets. Because if you remember, when Scalia was alive, he was always complaining that he didn't think he got paid enough.
Mm-hmm. Right. And what they did, I'll stay with Thomas for a second. What he did already goes against public disclosure. It's just that nobody legally is calling him on the carpet for it.
Is there a legal standard for that? Supreme Court? I thought the Supreme Court, I didn't think there was anything to hold him accountable for.
Well, yes, they have some. You're supposed to, they have some disclosure laws. Now, they have loopholes in those laws. You know, if it was a friend, you don't have to, you know, report this or that. But I know there are some laws because when the Thomas story started to break, they said, well, you're supposed to report gifts. Well, they weren't gifts because he was a friend. And so he made his own loophole.
Right.
If somebody challenges it, I doubt it's a loophole.
Yeah, it's amazing how many friends you get when you get on the Supreme Court.
You know?
It's amazing.
I mean, believe me, I'm looking at this, and you're talking to somebody that took a trip, and filed that trip. And yeah, I'll take my comeuppance, but I'm looking at this going, wow, you know? They just...
Yeah, I mean, of all people in this country, of every person, the 340 million of us, you singularly should be the one most outraged.
Well, I'm here. I'm doing your show. I'm pretty happy. But yes, I think about it, and it will drive me out of my mind. That's why I don't think about it a lot. But I do think about it because, you know, Thomas just didn't file things that he was supposed to file. And again, if nobody does anything about it, then it remains the status quo.
Yeah. Finally, got to get your thoughts on the gerrymandering in Alabama. Today you had three federal judges who ruled that the Alabama legislature's recent congressional map doesn't meet what was ordered. Any thoughts?
Well, I'm just wondering of the repercussions for, you know, the federal court has, you know, went against Alabama's congressional map, you know, that they've, you know, rejected that congressional map. And it's in a case involving, you know, racial issues. And so I think there's three judges on the panel, right?
Right.
And they have stopped Alabama from having any elections using the congressional maps because they were gerrymandered against the state's black voters. So everybody's wondering, how do you fix the map, the state legislature, ahead of the, you know, election cycle coming up? And some of the articles I read, it's kind of hilarious, actually, Rick. How can they fix the map? Well, guess what? You fix it.
You impose it.
Yes, you do a new one. It's called doing a new one. And it's not a...
Is that the official title?
Yeah, doing a new one. And it's not a practical answer for the legislature to say, well, we don't have time. It's in 2024. They can do it in a week. They have computers that do this stuff. This is not the old draw-by-hand deal. There's a computer that you can basically say, make me a minority district. Don't make me a minority district. They have computers. It's called AI, you know, and it does it.
I keep going back to my original thought. Let's just pick a random third-grade class and let them draw the maps.
Let them do it. And now, in this opinion, too, the judges make a comment because the state of Alabama has just absolutely said, we don't care about any other court rulings. There were other prior court rulings to this. So when they said, well, we don't have time, well, you would have had time if you'd have followed the rulings that are already occurred.
Yeah. No, just like Ohio. I mean, Ohio's kind of in the same boat, aren't you?
Well, yes. My home state, the legislature, drew maps. The Ohio Supreme Court said no. And the legislature said, oh, okay, here, let's give you the map. And this time we're going to make it in green instead of blue. I mean, I'm almost accurate. They literally changed like a dot or a word and then sent it back, you know, multiple times.
Yeah, change the file then.
Defying it. And again, it boils down to, you know, who steps in to, you know, police the place?
No.
Who does
right.
it?
We will see. But good stuff, Bob. As always, I appreciate the time. But I got to tell you, I think I'd be more angry than you.
Well, I believe me, I've thought about it because I read these stories. And I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. But, you know, things happen. Depends on the moment. Depends on who's there. Depends on who they don't want to go away. And then, you know, things happen. So it's okay.
There you go. Bob, appreciate the time.
Thank you.
Our good friend Bob Ney. I'll take a quick break right back after this to wrap things up. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. What are your plans for Labor Day weekend? Are you going to enjoy a barbecue with family and friends? Or maybe march with your union in a parade? Do you know the history of this holiday? On this day in labor history, the year was 1882. The first Labor Day celebration took place in New York City. 10,000 workers marched in a parade from City Hall to Union Square, then uptown to 42nd Street. Afterwards, there was a picnic, concert, and speeches. The workers included in their festivities a demand for the 8-hour day. The Labor Day events were organized by the New York Central Labor Union, an umbrella group of local union representatives. Workers wanted to show the strength of the emerging labor movement and push for improvements in working conditions. By 1884, Labor Day was celebrated in 23 states. The labor movement was growing and gaining even more attention after the 1894 Pullman strike. According to the AFL-CIO, in what most historians call an election year attempt to appease workers after the federal crackdown on the Pullman strike, shortly after the strike was broken, President Grover Cleveland signed legislation making the first Monday in September Labor Day a federal holiday. Interestingly, May 1st is traditionally considered International Workers' Day. President Cleveland did not want workers commemorating such events as the Haymarket tragedy, so he proposed that the holiday take place the first Monday in September. Today, far too few people remember Labor Day's union origins. People now see Labor Day as the unofficial end of summer. In an era when labor union membership has dwindled and far too many workers are not unionized, it is a time to remember the history of this worker-inspired holiday.
Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, and follow us on the Twitters at Labor History in 2.
Check out our website, TheRickSmithShow.com. So, hey, you got some lawmakers in Central Florida. Yes, it's Florida. You know craziness is about to come. But you've got some Central Florida lawmakers who are, evidently, they claim they're considering legislative, legal, and executive options because they're angry that small business owners in their towns have put rainbow decals on their windows. And this is, you know, kind of goes back to the Green Book, you know, of the 50s and 60s where black people, you know, would travel throughout the United States and had a green travel book that, you know, said, hey, you know, this place is friendly to us and we can stay there and we can eat there. And kind of that, this is just like a decal, you know, it's kind of like, you know, it is what it is. But the idea is that it's a safe place for the LGBTQ plus community. Anyone who feels threatened, they can go there, and it's a safe place. Evidently, these lawmakers are angry. They want to stop the practice. And I'm going, why? Why again? And I can only come up with the fact that probably some of them are small business owners, and they don't want to be singled out. They don't want people to know that they're, you know, homophobic or whatever.
So they're going to make sure that you can't say I'm okay. This is, again, remember, the free speech people, the people who love the Constitution. This is them doing this. This is the people who tell us there's too much government. This is the people who love small, less intrusive government. This is those people doing this kind of thing. But are we surprised?
You're listening to WLAK 1260 AM Amory and WBZH 910 AM W245 CT Hayward. Always streaming on the ABC Civic Media News app.